Hey everyone, welcome to Ecclesia Hattiesburg. Happy that you are joining us online tonight. For those of you who don't know who we are, just happen to be skipping by on Facebook or YouTube, welcome. We are a group that meets on Sunday nights in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. We are not really associated with any particular denomination. We just mostly are a group of people that are trying our best to figure out how to build a better world here. And we follow Christ's teachings, or we try to. And we're a group of people who believe everyone is welcome to be a part of that, and who try to give all of our time and energy and money to stuff that really is of consequence. And so because of all that, I don't know, we're a little bit strange. We don't have our own building. We don't have a lot of the things churches normally do. But we do have fun, and we do get to take part in some really meaningful work in this world. And you are invited to be a part of that. Of course, it all looks a little different right now during the pandemic, but hopefully that'll change soon, God willing. So I did want to kind of update you on a couple of things before I get rolling into the sermon tonight, which is that we are kind of in conversations trying to figure out when we can meet again in person. We are, of course, hosted by another church. We use another church's building on Sunday nights at 5 o'clock. And so we are waiting for Parkway Heights Methodist to get a couple weeks under their belt of meeting together. And then if we can figure out how to make the technology work, which is a big if, considering I can't even get music to work on that little front end little slide like it did 3 weeks ago. It no longer works. But if we can figure out how to live stream and also do everything, you know, live in person, we're going to try and do that. So it'll be a little while still. It'll be a few weeks, but we're going to try and get all that together. So we'll be probably asking you guys who'd be interested in coming. We won't have childcare. It'll be sit with your family. We'll try and maybe shorten it a little bit. I don't know. So you're not there so long with your family, but we also don't want to, we haven't met together in so long. We don't want to make it too short because what's the point, right? So we're trying to navigate all that. And I want to again thank all of you at Ecclesia for being so understanding and caring of those of us that are part of the staff and decision-making in regards to all this. There's just seems like there's no good answers a lot of the time. And I'm just having conversations with other ministers around the country in my circle of folks that I've gotten to know over the many, many years. And man, pastors are getting beat up right now. And there's a sense that, you know, some people want to never meet in person again. And other people think that you have no faith if you're not meeting right now without masks and doing communion and everything you really shouldn't do in order to help stop the spread of the pandemic. So they're torn between trying to manufacture themselves as martyrs and never get to do the things that they feel called to do. And that's a tough place to be in. So I thank you for not ever putting me in that position or any of the rest of our staff or leadership team. We will, as always, attempt to do what we think is the most loving thing to do. We understand that we are not called to be afraid of anything, and we are not afraid of something, but we also know that our chief calling as Christians is to care for those that are in front of us and near us, and to take care of our neighbor and to love our neighbor, and particularly to even sacrifice our own freedoms, the things that we are able to do, to sacrifice those things in order to care for those that are most vulnerable. I mean, that is the essence of what Jesus did, and it's the essence of what we're going to do when we make our decisions. We're going to try and make the decision based on that. We're not persecuted. We're not oppressed. We're not meeting because we're scared or because the government is keeping us from doing it. Everything we're doing, we're at least trying to do because of how Jesus has loved us and how we feel like we're called to love others. So that's our standard, and that's going to continue to be our standard. I'm sure we have not gotten it perfect. I'm sure we will not get it perfect, but that's okay. That's the way the world works, and we're going to try our best. So thanks for hanging in there with us. Thanks for being a part of things with us. And extend that same grace to those that you come across in this world. And if you meet another pastor, this is not a cry for help. I'm good. You guys have been great. Meet another pastor. If you're from Hattiesburg, in Hattiesburg, or outside of Hattiesburg, give them some encouragement and give them some grace, because God knows they need it right now. All right. Well, we're still marching through the lectionary text, and we're in Matthew chapter 20 tonight. And this is, this to me is a parable that stands out. This parable has come to mean so much to me in the last decade or so. I don't know. It feels potent right now at this point in history, my own personal history anyways, or where we're at as a culture. And so we're going to get into it, but I'm going to tell you that I think this is one of the most upsetting parables that Jesus tells, right? In a lot of Jesus' parables, the underdog pulls out a victory of some sort, right? And the those that are left out and excluded are kind of end up winning, and the last become first, and the first become last, and the self-righteous get what's coming to them, and all these kind of things. And there's a certain level of satisfaction to that. And so there's something about those that are kind of fun to read in some ways. But this is one of those ones where it feels like the good guys lose. And this is a parable that doesn't feel fair or just or right, and the good guys feel like they lose. And I want to lean into that today and think about what that means for us and talk about it. And if you've been a part of Ecclesia for a very long time, you've heard me talk about this passage before, because it means a lot to me. And so let's go ahead and look at it. We're in Matthew 20, verses 1 through 16. It says this: "For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire laborers for his vineyard. After agreeing with the laborers for the usual daily wage, he sent them into his vineyard. When he went out about 9 o'clock, he saw others standing idle in the marketplace, and he said to them, 'You also go into the vineyard, and I will pay you whatever is right.' So they went. He went in and went out again about noon and about 3 o'clock, and he did the same. And about 5 o'clock, he went out and found others standing around, and he said to them, 'Why are you standing here idle all day?' And they said to him, 'Because no one has hired us.' He said to them, 'You also go into the vineyard.' When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his manager, 'Call the laborers and give them their pay, beginning with the last and then going to the first.' When those hired about 5 o'clock came, each of them received the usual daily wage. Now, when the first came, they thought they would receive more, but each of them also received the usual daily wage. And when they received it, they grumbled against the landowner, saying, 'These last worked only 1 hour, and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the day in the scorching heat.' But he replied to one of them, 'Friend, am I doing you no wrong? Did you not agree to work for me for the usual daily wage? Take what belongs to you and go. I choose to give to this last the same as I give to you. Am I not allowed to do what I choose with what belongs to me? Or are you envious because I am generous?' So the last will be first, and the first will be last." And so this is a story of a landowner who goes out early in the morning, finds workers for the vineyard. They work all day. He's going, sending out during the day, getting more people to come in and work at various parts of the day, until finally at the very end of the day, with 1 hour left, he goes out, hires more people to work just 1 hour, and then pays them all the same. And those who came early in the morning, who are paid last, received the same amount. It's what they agreed to, but the same amount. And they're upset. And I understand it, right? We've all been there before. I'm sure you've been in the situation where you studied harder than the person who gets a better score than you do, or you do your work and you show up on time and you don't have excuses and you're always doing what you're supposed to do, but somehow they get the raise, or they get the recognition, or they get the praises from the boss, or whatever the thing might be, right? Maybe you are the good friend who really spends the time and listens for hours and is kind and caring, and you know, she goes to prom with the other guy who's kind of a jerk. Purely hypothetical, not that happened to me. But just kidding, we didn't have a prom. I went to a Christian school. We weren't allowed to dance. So, but this is like injustice, right? I have earned something and someone else gets the thing that I should have gotten only. They shouldn't have gotten it. I should have gotten it, right? It's this sense of injustice, and it's the kind of thing, it's kind of unfairness that will eat you up inside, right? It makes you unable to sleep. It makes you play out the imaginary arguments for weeks to come where you're kind of, ooh, I should have said this and I would have done this, right? Where you're kind of playing out these fights for weeks afterwards, right? We have been here. We all know what this feels like, right? I mean, I got here early in the morning. I did the work. I have been here all day. I worked hard. I sweat. I did everything I was supposed to do. And then this guy rolls up right before quitting time. And you pay him the same amount. And not only do you pay him the same amount, you don't do it in secret. You pay him the same amount in front of me and let him leave. And then I get paid the same as he does. You let me know it, right? Yes, I'm upset. Yes, you would be upset. And guess who's not working here again, right? I mean, this seems like bad business. This seems unfair. This is obviously not how justice works. It is not fair, right? And something being fair is this very is this thing that we learn. Once we learn it, it becomes very deeply ingrained in us. Now, I don't think it comes by us natural. In fact, yesterday we had a conversation with my six-year-old Lillian about fairness that she didn't really care for very much, which is her brother was playing with one of her toys. She didn't want him playing with it. And so she snatched it from him, which made him cry and made us get upset at her because we're trying to not make him cry as much as possible. And we said, just let him play with it. Who cares? Well, it's mine. So yeah, well, you play with his toys. Yeah, but I want to play with his toys. And we said, well, you got to make a choice, right? Either you guys can play with each other's toys or you can't. So if he can't play with your toys, you're not allowed to play with his. And she said, that's not fair. I said, it's the definition of fair, right? We're treating you both the same way. You both have the same rules applied to you. No one's getting special treatment. Either both of you can play with each other's toys or neither of you can play with each other's toys. And after a back and forth several times of this, she just grabbed her toy, headed to her room and said, I don't want to think about this anymore. I get, right? I wouldn't want to either. But I mean, she couldn't believe it because she wanted to play with them. She wanted all of it, right? But when something happens to her and there senses that it's unfair, she's going to pull out that fair phrase pretty quickly, even though she really doesn't apply it to her brother yet. And it's deeply ingrained in us, right? We have this deep sense of what is fair and what is not fair. You're getting ready to see our politics blow up, if they haven't already blown up enough, over Supreme Court justice, right? And a lot of what's going to be thrown out there is fairness because it doesn't feel like there's equity going on, right? This is deeply ingrained in us, right? And maybe what's worst about this story is that the owner somehow acts, you know, he has the nerve to act like he's surprised at the reaction, right? As if he sees nothing wrong with what has happened. He's like, what's wrong with you? What are you upset about, right? As if those of us who showed up early in the morning, as if we have not been embarrassed and humiliated, as if we haven't been kind of taken advantage of and abused. I mean, just because the guy who owns all of this, just because he did, you know, exactly what he promised with us, exactly what we agreed to, just because he gave us purpose and meaningful work and a means to provide for our families that we wouldn't have had otherwise, and we agreed to it ahead of time, and he followed the deal to the letter. He did all that, right? Like a jerk. Right, because in the end, when landowners finish talking, you realize that landowner isn't mean. He feels cruel to that first-hour worker. Feels like he's doing something wrong from that perspective. But in the end, the landowner is not being cruel at all. Landowner's done exactly what he agreed to do, what he has the right to do. The landowner is not mean. Not unjust. I mean, the parable is mean because it tells us a lot about our nature, right? tells us a lot about the way we prefer the world to work. It tells us a lot about what it is we find most offensive about God, and it doesn't make us look great. Because I don't know about you. I grew up in church. I grew up in Christian schools. I went out in the hallway when I was 4 years old and said the prayer, and was in Bible class or Sunday school 6 out of 7 days a week, you know, my entire life. And I've lived much of my life understanding myself to be the early morning worker. I mean, I said the prayer when I was four. That's pretty early in the morning to get to the vineyard, right? I have spent much of my life surveying the landscape, checking everyone's time cards and performance evaluations, right? And feeling pretty good by comparison, right? I've been at various points, I've been a rule follower and I've been a teetotaler, and I have absolutely been self-righteous, you know, a laborer in the field that has been there since the beginning of the day. I've been those things. And I can tell you this, as someone who was the early morning worker, at least in my own mind, I'm the early morning worker, it is miserable. There's not a lot of life in it, right? Because I am just devastated by the day. I am bereft at the idea that all these others seem to bask in the reward that should be for me only. They're doing all the things that I have chosen not to do because I'm not supposed to, or they're not doing the things that I have committed myself to doing because of what you're supposed to do. They are not performing well. I am performing well. And I am scandalized by the grace that they are shown, by those that I have deemed to be the least worthy, right? I am persecuted by the good things that the lazy and the lackluster are just bountifully enjoying. And so as an early morning worker, I'm getting all the work and none of the joy. I am the older brother standing outside the party that the father's thrown for the prodigal son, right? It's religion empty of all of its life. And I could not recommend something less to you. I couldn't recommend something less to you. Being the early morning worker is miserable. Right? So what's the solution? What do we do with that? How do you turn this parable that feels often like bad news, at least to people like me, self-righteous jerks like myself, how do you turn this bad news into the good news I presume it was intended to be? And I believe there's one thing that you can do. One simple step. One key kind of interpretive lens that will resurrect this parable and make it the good news it's intended to be. I think you have to remember, I have to remember one indispensable truth. You and I are not the early morning workers. That's not us. It says something about us that we read this parable and that's where we locate ourselves. But you and I, we are not the early morning workers. The fastest way to make the good news bad is to believe the lie that we have earned all that we have received. The fastest way to make the good news bad is to believe the lie that you have earned all that you've received, that we are the early morning workers. We are the righteous. We are the few and the proud who are getting what we deserve from God, and we deserve great things. The good news of this parable is we are all the last hour workers. We're all the last hour workers. We're all the people who get in at the last minute and still get paid for the full day. And that's why this is great news. This is good news. People not getting what they deserve is poisonous to the early morning folks, and it is salvation to those of us that just got here. We are all the last hour workers. This is the most beautiful injustice we could ever hope for, right? Us last hour folks owe everything to the fact that God is generous. God is generous. And that is good news. In fact, the one thing, the one bit of good news I really, really hope you hear tonight is this. By most of our definitions, God is not just. By most of our definitions, God is not just, right? Our definitions are too small for that world. God, for that word, God is not just by our definitions, right? And we struggle with this concept. But God is not fair. God is gracious. God is generous. God is a God of abundant mercy. Not fairness, not justice by our definition. In fact, one of the big keys I think we need to do in regards to changing our definitions based on what Jesus taught is God's justice is not at odds with God's generosity. God doesn't have multiple personalities. God is love, which means God's justice is not at odds with God's generosity. They are one and they are the same. God's idea of justice, unlike our own, is the pervasive incarnation of God's generosity anywhere and everywhere. One phrase I heard was God's justice is love distributed. God's justice and God's generosity are the same thing. We read the story and it feels so unjust. It feels so unfair. Because our definitions are wrong. That generosity might feel deeply insulting if you imagine yourself as someone who would benefit from getting what you deserve. But when you know, you know. When you haven't forgotten what it's like to be picked last, when you remember not having a purpose or a place or even being able to come up with what you would add to it if you were chosen. When you recall that all we have is grace on top of grace on top of grace. I've done nothing to warrant it, to deserve it. It's just been given. When we remember that, then this generous God becomes such good news. And grace becomes the kind of justice we've all prayed for. One of the surest signs to me that someone has not understood the message of Jesus is when they can't reconcile God's generosity with God's justice. I mean, you'll hear a lot about, well, yeah, we should be kind to people, and yeah, we should be generous with people, but don't forget God's justice. Don't forget God's justice as if that somehow negates it, or that somehow puts a governor on what God will give or do or how God will love. That's not God, that's us. And please understand that any religious practice, any political ideology, anything that leads you to feel more entitled, more deserving of what you have been given than what you've been given than what anyone else might be getting, anything that leads you down that road, you've traded the good news in for something lifeless. You are not the first one there in the morning. You are not the one who has the right to be scandalized by God's generosity. This is good news, but it's only good news when you understand the grace that you've been given, the grace that I've been given. This is good news. And in a world that thrives on a cheaper and more lifeless version of God's generosity and justice, now more than ever, we need to be here. We need to revel in this good news and allow others to revel in it as well. Because this is the good news is we just got here. We just showed up at the Vineyard. In the last hour, we just made it. And the good news is that doesn't matter one bit. That's God's generosity. That's God's grace and God's love and God's justice. Can it be ours? All right, we need to go. Peace be with you. Have a great week. Join us on the Zoom call if you'd like after this, and we will see you and talk to you then. But thank you. Peace be with you.